Yeah, I guess I'll kick us off. Well, I've got one of my tried and true besties with testies. friend of many years since, what, 2009, 2010?
Yeah, I think so.
We lived together in Austin. We went through divorces at the same time. We worked at the same company. People thought we might have been getting divorces to be with each other at certain times.
Hearsay, you're on.
So I moved in with him after my separation. In 2016, when I moved here to Charleston, eventually got Jake, talked him into coming out here.
Yeah.
So it's going to say warmer weather, but it's actually...
It's basically the exact same as Houston, but yeah. It's close.
The beaches are a little nicer.
Yeah.
My very first guest on the podcast. So here we are.
What's his name?
Oh, his name? Oh, your name? Yeah, maybe that's a good point. I don't know how anonymous you wanted to be. Do you have a pseudonym or?
Well, I figure
a safe word. What am I trying to say?
Pineapple. Wait, what? I hadn't actually thought about that. Well, I figure anybody who's going to listen is going to know who I am.
Yeah,
and so it's kind of.
I don't think it's
going to.
I don't think random people are going to really care about this podcast and be looking into you. So this is my good friend, longtime confidant, fellow musician, fellow adventurer, explorer, traveler, extraordinaire, Jacob Allen Augustine, born social security number is. So this is Jake the Snake. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm pleased to be here.
I'm being here in your own studio apartment.
Yeah, no, this is great. I actually, as I said, I enjoyed the first episode, and we were talking about, just podcast and the direction and just, I guess, podcasts in general, sharing what I liked about it and, various hesitancies and. Well, I guess what started our conversation in the pool was I was saying how, just impressed and like proud that you had started this because it had been something you had talked about a handful of times in the past that I can remember. And we got to talking a little bit about how it was like it takes a, what's the word?
Well, maybe
just
like,
taking initiative to actually take the step towards doing something, moving it from like hypotheticals and random ideas and chit chat to like something real.
So yeah,
that's cool.
Idea to physical form. Yeah, I guess the title of the first episode of A Vulnerable First Step is pretty apropos for that. We're definitely someone or people who love talking ideas a lot.
Yeah.
And if we had a nickel or even, I don't know, a grain of rice or
couple
something.
A couple
shekels for every idea that we've had that was just sort of a hypothetical thing that we could do. We've had many, which is fun. It's fun to think about ideas. And honestly, there's something that I can't remember if Christy and I were talking about this the other day or not, or who I was talking about it with, but like there's something in me that I think causes a little bit of, I don't know, shame is a little bit too strong of a word, but like because I share my ideas so like easily, I'm very open with sharing different things that I'm working on, or like for me writing, right now I'm writing a book, and so I've told a few people that, and because I've told people that, when I see them, they ask, oh, how's writing going? And it's only because they care about me and they're interested in, what I'm writing about. Like, for example, yesterday we went to, Christy's mom and stepdad's place, and her stepdad, one of the first things he asked me, oh, how's the writing going? And I didn't quite realize it at the time, but in hindsight, it kind of like gave me like a, I think because he's kind of a sort of a pseudo authority figure in my life, or like a father-ish type figure that I would want to impress. It kind of made me, I don't know, feel in a weird, sometimes when people ask how it's going, it's like, I almost get this fear that rises up in me that's like, oh, I have to deliver on what I've promised, you know? And so Christy was kind of saying that, you know, this is why I don't tell people things, because it's like, if you don't set the expectation, you don't have to meet the expectation.
Wise words.
Wise words, exactly. She's very wise. But and I think that's what's so beautiful about our relationship, is that we very much so are two, in many ways, very dynamically different. But, you know, I was thinking about it today. We were talking about this this morning, and just about me telling people, and, you know, we had seen my neighbor next door, a guy named Philip, who him and his wife, they come and move next door for only a few months while they're filming Righteous Gemstones here in town. He works in the grip department, whatever they do.
Grip things,
exactly. But I hadn't seen him in a while, and of course, one of the first things he said, oh, how's the writing going? And Christy was saying, like, man, I even felt like a gulp moment for you, you know, like, oh, all these people are asking you, what have you done? You've told all these people they have this expectation. No, but it is kind of I realized, like, the power of perception of how you take different things is, like, either I could take that, like, people being interested, it doesn't have to be whatever thing it is that you tell people you're doing, it's like, if you're surrounding yourself, obviously, with people who care about you and have your best interests at heart, they're genuinely just taking interest, and they want to encourage you to do that. And I was telling Christy, like, I saw almost like a visual of people asking about it. I could, based on my own perception, I could either allow that to fill, like, be helium in my balloon, so to speak, or I could take that as, oh, they need to, you know, this is extra pressure.
As now a pin in your balloon.
Exactly, taking the air out of my balloon or putting it in. It's up to me and how I perceive it. So, and I think that's something that I'm on my way to letting go of, as far as, like, feeling that pressure of when people ask about it, to not think of it as, like, you know, some sort of demand that I'm doing something, working hard enough, or, you right. know, whatever it is.
I was curious, yeah, because I think I'd be curious if part of, you know, the gut reaction, it feels very much like what I, and I'm sure countless other people, experience, like the imposter syndrome effect.
Yes.
Where it's like, you know, it's so weird. It's just a cultural thing, I guess, because if you get a job, or get hired for anything, it could be like trade work too. It doesn't necessarily have to be 9 to 5, but there's something inherent in, like, the transaction of it, that it's not questioned, and it's almost like, it's, I don't want to say, like, respected necessarily, but it's like, there's no question. Like, so if somebody says, like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, somebody's paying me to help cut down this tree. You don't, there's no, like, identity or thing. Nobody asks, like, oh, are you now,
a tree cutter?
Yeah, a lumberjack or something. It's like, you did something in turn, and there's, like, because everything's, yeah, typically we kind of, we as maybe a culture tend to, look at everything through, like, a transactional lens.
Yeah.
And so, so yeah, so if like, in your example, if you, like, quit a traditional job and have been lately, like, working on a book and haven't, like, published a book previously, then it's like there's this inherent thing, or at least this would be very natural to feel, that, like, oh, when somebody says, how's the book coming? They're not curious because they love me or they're interested in the book. They're it's almost like it could be easily received as like either like a little jab or like a kind of you're on the stand now, you've got to like defend a case of why you're choosing to write a book when you're, you know, haven't been an author in the past or something. Yeah. There's like a weird dynamic when, you know, any endeavor, and I think this is, I guess what we were talking about earlier as far as just podcasts in general, like any new endeavor will face that. And so,
right,
like no, no author, or rather every author had a first book,
right?
And every, you know, musician learned an instrument for the first time. Yeah,
learned their first chord, wrote their first song.
Yeah, and so it's like, but yeah, I think it's, I haven't thought too much about that, so I could easily ramble and not add much. But I guess there's something I think about, like, the transactional nature of how most people look at work causes, and I've done this too at times where I had like, well, actually I remember after I did a music program at a school in Austin and started working as whenever I was doing sound engineering work.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my first sound gig and, I guess there was, it was a little different cause I felt like, okay, well I at least took some classes, but it's like, there was a lot of insecurity around it. And over the next few months, I dreaded when people asked me like what I did for a living because it felt, whatever I was doing, like I didn't get a W-2 for it. So it felt like it wasn't real or it wasn't like
legitimate.
Yeah. Legitimate in some kind of way. So I guess all that to say, like, I think it would be, it's like a normal reaction to have that sense of like, ooh, are they like,
right,
this is a nice way of kind of grilling me, like,
mm-hmm.
But to your point, yeah, it's really a perception issue, because if you consider, like, the person who's talking, it's very likely there's someone who loves you or, you know, you're close to, and there's nothing out of the ordinary about asking how's the book coming when they recently learned you were writing a book.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, genuine interest versus some sort of ill intent in like some
criticism
way.
Criticism or putting you on. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I'm sure that there is some sort of connection to, and what we're talking about, obviously, a lot of people have dealt with in different scenarios and would think have some of the same insecurities come up when quitting a traditional job to do something creative. And I think that decision inherently is something, especially here in the States, when we associate identity and self-worth so much so with the dollar amount that we're making, that it's hard to kind of sever that connection of. So I think that there's some of that there with me a little bit, that's like, oh, I'm not earning money right now, and feeling a bit like, oh, I'm not adding value to, you know, my life. You know, right now I'm relying on my wife who's making, who's, you know, has a stressful full-time job. And that's a whole nother, you know, topic to talk about how we, you know, got to that decision type of thing. But, you know, I think there is, I think a lot of perception comes down to is like, am I really believing the best intentions in other people or not? And, well, the problem with like so much of our psyche is that we have all this baggage from when we were young that we haven't, that's just come along for the ride unquestioned. You know, if you don't actually take inventory and look and see what all baggage is there, you don't know what's back there. And so, yeah, it's like, I'm realizing it in a deeper way now as I'm talking, that like, I've kind of had some sort of idea, maybe through times that I have been criticized in the past, that, you know, there is that sense of imposter syndrome of not being good enough, or I don't know enough about writing to think that I can, you know, some of those thoughts do come in. But I think when it comes to people asking about the book and, you know, this kind of very specific scenario that's coming up, you know, when I really come down to it, like when I literally ask myself, do you think that these people that have asked you have your best intentions at heart, or are they trying to jab you in some sort of way, or like, oh, you, so you're writing a book, huh? Okay. See, believe it when I see it. Yeah. And, of course that's not the heart of any of these people that I surround myself with, that I know love me and have the best intentions for me. So that whole idea that I have, or that stimulus that happens to me where I'm like getting really, oh God, am I doing enough? And, you know, it can kind of spin me into this whole mental state where I start questioning how hard I've been working or all these different things, that, it's unnecessary, and I can let go of that, and do it because I am enjoying doing it. I am enjoying the process of writing, finding the joy in it, and not treating it so much like it's this work that, oh, in order for me to please all these people that I told I was going to write a book, like, if, you know, and I think that's why writing or doing any sort of creative endeavor, but especially writing, and especially one that is a topic that's so intertwined into my own story, it is a very therapeutic process. And just in the last few months of starting to write and leaving my old job and kind of career behind, there's so many like of these old identity things, like you don't realize how much of an identity structure you have in your job until you don't have that job. And it's like, oh, you start feeling like a piece of shit. It's just like, I don't make any money right now. I'm like, what am I worth? I'm literally worth this many dollars a month.
You're one pathetic loser.
None taken. Yeah, it's such an interesting thing, these different structures that we create to make ourselves feel okay with who we are or feel worthy, you know, when in reality, we are worthy just for existing, you know. And but very, very much so is easier said than done to let go of some of this stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a like my mindset around work, I feel like, has always been a little skewed because I never like, I'll have to edit this out if my employer's listening.
They're definitely not listening. It's okay. Yeah.
Well, it's like, yeah, it's like I've never had a job that I felt was part of a broader like plan or career. Like for me, what I did for work has always been, how can I get the best time to money ratio and or the most flexibility and freedom out of my day.
I mean, out of that scenario, I'm surprised prostitution hasn't been on your plate yet.
Well, yeah, no, we'll have to edit this.
There was that time.
But what I was getting at is with, because of that mindset, I wonder if that plays into kind of, you know, this, I'm curious your take, like feeling almost, you know, like inferior, or like feeling like you need to show that you're making like a certain amount of money to be legitimate. I wonder if it's different for people who have careers that they really love doing. 'Cause I know people that do, like they've always wanted to be whatever.
Yeah.
And then they are that. And it doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean it's, doesn't have downsides, but like all in all, they're really happy with mm-hmm. what they're doing.
And again, prostitution is a great
example. Another great example. No. And it's like some of those jobs, I'll take, contrast too. Like some are high paying. So it could be like, oh yeah, you dreamed of becoming a doctor and you are, and you love it. And it's like, well, yeah, but you're also like, you make a really good living as a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could be like, I don't know. It could be something. But like, say social workers, mm-hmm. Or even teachers, I don't, like, depending on your school district, you know, don't make very much and it's high stress and whatnot. But some people do actually just love teaching and they find a lot of fulfillment.
Right.
And so in conversation, I guess what I'm getting at is like, if I was a teacher in a poor school district and I made like a below average wage or something, and I was at a party and somebody said, oh, what do you do for work? And I said, I'm a teacher. I don't think I would feel any sense of inferiority mm-hmm. because I genuinely was proud of the work I did. Ooh, because I yeah. did something that I felt was meaningful, regardless of not making a third of what, you know, the other people in the circle might make. Because I wonder...
That's a really good point.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Yeah, because I think for me, that plays into that sense of like... like, I've never had a job that I found meaning in or felt any sense of fulfillment in. And therefore, like, the salary was the only reason that I could justify being there. Mm-hmm. And then if the salary leaves some to be desired, then you really just feel like, oh, man, I'm a loser at this table. Because not only is the salary, like, all I have, I don't have anything I even can, like, talk about. Enjoying about this thing.
Yeah.
But you know, if the salary is not even that much, then I really feel like I'm not doing anything with my life. So there's something about that I've kind of wondered about recently.
Yeah, I think you bring up a few interesting points. You know, I think there are one thing that you said that kind of got the wheels turning a bit. Was just kind of like when you gave the example of you being a teacher and how, you know, especially with the, you know, the lower income school kind of scenario and like you're doing this like Freedom Riders deal where you're, you know, impacting people that really need that help. And there's very much so that like impact that maybe supplements whatever income that you may be lacking. Mm-hmm. And... you know, I think that, and the whole idea of impact is a really interesting topic because it's something that I've internally sensed a lot of. I think just because I was raised in the church that I went to, that was very much so like about going to the nations and like, you know, like my sister is a missionary and like this. We'd go to these things called World Mandate where it was just like all about it, like mission stuff. Like it kind of made this idea that if you were really on fire for Jesus, you kind of had to be the going to in the scarier place that it is, the like more points you get, you know, so
your passport better be just like, yeah, filled up.
It's like Afghanistan and all these places that, and so I think that kind of instilled a bit of what some might call like a savior complex in me. There was a really great movie that I love that it like kind of encapsulate this perfectly called Machine Gun Preacher. It's literally the dumbest name for the movie, but it's such a great movie that it probably would have gotten way more like accolades, but it's called Machine Gun Preacher.
You know what I thought of when you said that? I was like sci-fi movie, like Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like the chick with a machine gun leg.
The machine gun leg, exactly. So that encapsulates it perfectly. So machine gun leg. But no, the movie is basically just about this, like, kind of rough, like, Harley riding, you know, kind of criminal guy that ends up, like, turning his life around for Jesus and then ends up going on this trip to Africa and finds out that there's all these kids that are just orphaned and there's all this warfare. And he ends up like going over there, even though he has a family and stuff in the States, he ends up spending all of his time over there to help these orphans and like literally like, you know, shooting the bad guys. And it's like, it's based on a true story, which is pretty crazy, but there's all they do a good job in the movie of kind of capturing these moments where he's back at home. And there's a specific scene that always gets me when his daughter, who is like going to her senior prom or whatever, her and her friends want to chip in together and get a limousine for it. And he's asking if he can have like X number of dollars. So he's like, that money, you know what that money could do for these kids? You know, it's just like, yeah. He yells at her and she starts crying and she's like, you love those black babies more than you love me. And it's just like, oh my God, like there's this dichotomy of like, he wants to go help these people that are in such dire situation, way worse than anyone really has it that I know of here in the States. And, but in the process of doing so, he has to like essentially kind of abandon his family. He doesn't take care of his family's needs. Mm-hmm. I mean, physically, but not emotionally as a father. Mm-hmm. And, anyway, I think in my own life, like I have constantly struggled with this idea of, is what I'm doing, whatever it may be in life, having an impact, like really this need for impact. And I think, you know, as I, you know, when we lived together in Austin and I left Antioch Church and was kind of just in this zone of not really knowing what I believe, but didn't really care to think about it too much and was okay with that. Like, I think that maybe kind of calmed down a little bit. And we were just living and working, and we were so busy with school and working at P.F. Chang's together and, you know, all the different things that we had going on, that I guess I didn't really, when you're at that age, you don't really have to think about that too much, because so much of your life is ahead, you know, and you're just thinking about ahead. And I think when, now that we're in our mid to upper 30s, you start thinking about, like, mortality more, and like, what does my life mean and what impact am I making? And what I've realized now, like kind of going back into this spiritual path, and like, I really feel like I have found something for myself. Not that I in any way feel like, oh, I found the truth or anything like that. But for myself, I feel like I have been freed of a lot of different things that I was carrying. And I have a lot of so much more lightness and happiness and joy in my life and peace that I now want, have the desire to help others find that and help others let go of different things or different fears or whatever things that they may have been carrying around. I want to help ease pain in the world. And I think that because of the model that was created in me through church, there was a lot of like salvation numbers games and like return on investment type thing. You know, you go on a mission trip and it's like, this, you know, 427 people were saved, and you it's almost like you write it down in like a, you know, balance sheet or something. And I think when we start to like quantify certain things spiritually, it creates this kind of weird capitalistic Western view of like spirituality that isn't quite, I don't know, something's not quite right about it for me. But anyway, bringing that model into my life, it's like I have this kind of, even now, consistently like questioning, is what I'm doing, does it have an impact? Mm-hmm. And I think part of my path has been just to see the impact that already exists, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I, you know, you can call bullshit on any of this, but I think I'm a good friend to different. Yeah, you have like a bullshit button. Like to phone a friend.
He's not answering.
So there's that, but I think to this very long kind of meandering road, to tie it back to what you were saying about me like writing a book and feeling insecure about it and things like that, and you giving the example of a teacher, like the reason why as a teacher for a low-income school you wouldn't be embarrassed or anything to say that, even though you were making a lower amount of money, there's like this virtue that's associated mm-hmm. in it, because you are making an impact to people that need it. And I think maybe with where I am right now, because it is my first book, it is my first podcast, it is these kind of unknown the success of these ideas are unknown at this point. So, aka the impact is still unknown. Mm-hmm. And I think that, yeah, if I had this, like, I don't know, quote unquote successful, whatever, you know, obviously successful is such a personal definition to each of us, whatever that means. But like, if I had something that was established, or I had written a book that was doing things, it wouldn't be the same kind of feeling of, ugh. And I think because it's still in this like embryo stage, so to speak. But I think this is part of my own journey of learning to believe in myself, learning self-confidence, and learning to see all of this stuff as opportunities. You know, this time where I get to write full time and work on a podcast and like really tap into this creative side of myself alongside of still exploring all these different spiritual things in my day to day. It's just like the land of opportunity. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, as I'm talking about it, I think I'm realizing that I have been kind of seeing and judging what I've been doing this time of my life from some sort of lens of success that has like a dollar value connected to it, or some sort of proven concept, or like, you know, because it's not successful yet, or it hasn't proven some XYZ thing, that I get insecure when people ask me about it. And because it's right now, it is kind of a vulnerable, you know, new thing. And, but I don't have to see it that way, I think, right, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, totally. And I'm glad you're sharing it, like, through writing, and then, like, this podcast, I think, will resonate with a lot of people. And, yeah, I think the...
Maybe at least seven,
I think. At least seven of them. Yeah, that I can think of. Including, you know, significant others.
Well,
no. Yeah, I think... I'm really glad you're doing it, because I think it's a topic, especially being, you know, whether it's somebody from where we grew up in Texas or where we are now in Charleston, there's a lot of, it's a very, I don't know, Bible Belt-y region. And even apart from that, I think in general, most people, if not all people, I would say, will start thinking of questioning, contemplating spirituality at some point in their life. And yeah, like, and often, I think people tend to just go with what's familiar. And so almost, I feel like politics gets kind of like that too. It's like, you know, whatever political slant you grew up, your parents had, you just kind of just adopted along the way and assume. And I think that's similar with religion as well, and philosophy, and just like worldviews. You tend to adopt what's familiar, and then at some point later in life, usually probably in your 20s or something, as you kind of break out into the world and become more independent, you start revisiting a lot of those things. Yeah, like you and I have. And so I think it'll be really, yeah, it's a real, I think it's a good concept. I'm excited for it.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I think you said this in the earlier, or the last episode, the idea too, like approaching topics, not with like, oh, I've solved the code,
yeah,
follow my program.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, here's my experience up to now,
yeah,
and here's what has worked for me, and then like, yeah, bring people on, or hearing from others, like, what's been their experience, like, what worked for them. Maybe you can adopt some ideas, maybe they can learn from you, and vice versa and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that'll be great.
Yeah, thanks for the encouragement, as always.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's so necessary to have friends that you can talk to and like share different ideas. And, you know, we were talking about this a little bit earlier today about there's like a, you know, I have this visual of, you know, someone taking a first step, but there's that, like, if you slow it down into like, I don't know, 8,000 frames per second or something, slow motion, it's like that half step where the weight is almost shifting forward into forward momentum. But so the foot is lifted, but it could easily still go backwards. Like if you're standing with both feet next to each other and then you take a first kind of step, forget there's a specific stance in Tai Chi for that called, I think, empty stance or something. I'll have to ask Jan about that. But where you could easily say, nah, never mind. Mm-hmm. But then there's this like momentum that happens that where stepping forward is mm-hmm. almost easier than stepping backward. But it's almost like when you're at that halfway point, and I guess this visual kind of representing an idea, like, for example, me starting a podcast or, you know, you recording an album or something like that, or starting some sort of artist profile. There is very much so, like, we all struggle with, I mean, there's some people that just do not struggle with self-criticism, and good on them, but like most of us have this. If we haven't done it before, then there is a risk that we could fall on our face. You know, we don't know if we're going to yeah. make a solid first step. And I think that is very much so where the idea of community comes in, where we have friends and people around us that create, they're almost like the hardness of the ground mm-hmm. for the visual, like the environment that you surround yourself in, the people that you see that would be, you know, depending on how encouraging, how supportive they would be, is kind of the supportiveness of the ground in which you are stepping. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter how the first step goes out, you can continue to take more because the ground is solid. Mm-hmm. And there is that safety to where it's like, nobody cares. Like if you're going to, not that nobody cares in whatever you're like, oh, you want to write a book? I don't fucking care. Eh, whatever. You could ride a moose for all I care. I don't know. It's like, what? But they like, there is this, you know, environment of, and I think this is why it's so great to have people in our lives that are also have the similar type of interests. Like when we play music and we kind of spur each other on to write music, we both have similar interests, so that just helps even more. But like, it doesn't matter if you fall or like the song is not that great, you know, I'm still gonna be encouraging to you to continue writing. And and I think that's the main thing, is just taking, you know, as cliche as it is, it's just taking the step. Mm-hmm. And there's one of my other good friends, Christian, he sent me, I wish I had the materials in front of me, but there's this like, this book that we've both been reading called The Gap and the Gain. And I can't remember if these concepts were in that book, but it's a similar author. I can get the information on that here soon, but the book that I'm reading is called The Gap and the Gain. But there's something that they talk about that is called like the three C's or something. Mm-hmm. And, but in the C's being like, commitment is the first step. And then that creates, capabilities, which then creates confidence. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that, let's say for this specific example of, starting a podcast, I've never done it before. There's some vulnerability involved that kind of makes me feel uneasy, but I feel like, you know, we've talked about it for a long time. I've wanted to do this for a long time. Making the commitment to, I'm going to do it, and I'm just going to, like, you have to take action towards the commitment. And so in the process, and sometimes I think the way they talk about the commitment is like making some sort of hard date with a measurable outcome of, mm-hmm. like, that could be record the first podcast episode. Mm-hmm. But as you work towards the commitment, you create capabilities. So like, as I'm doing this, I learn different techniques and different things along the way that all kind of accumulate, like past the fear of the wall of fear that I'm hitting is all these like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, but you know, you're kind of going back and forth. But as you're going back and forth, still stepping, taking measurable steps toward the commitment, you create this, your skills improve, creating capability, and then you actually do the goal. You record the first podcast episode like I did last Friday, and then that creates confidence. And then it's like a circular thing that you create the next commitment, episode two or whatever the next thing. Maybe you add a few more bells and whistles to the next commitment. But at, whereas I think in the past I have had this idea of I need to create all these capabilities first and feel really confident, to feel confident, then to make the commitment. Sure. Whereas the way that they set it out and the way it, the way they talk about it seems to make a lot of sense, that like you actually can't make like true confidence in yourself without actually doing it. You know, it's almost like having someone be, I don't know, like a race car driver or something, that they have never set foot in a car. They've never done any of the virtual reality stuff, but they're like academically, they know everything there is to know about racing, all this stuff, but they've never actually done it. So it's like, well, how can you really build confidence in yourself if you haven't actually done it yet? Or whatever the example could be, but actually, you know, because making a commitment sets, puts you, sets in motion that like, oh shit factor, you know, like I've set this thing in motion. Like I've created a, I don't know, we were giving examples before about like putting on some sort of like live music or singer songwriter event in the space here. Like, oh, I set the date for this. I invited people. Oh, I have to, I've got to figure it out now. Yeah, it's the pee running down your leg now. Like, but you set the commitment and it almost forces you to face the fear. And in the process, you create these different capabilities and you realize like, oh, I this isn't as hard as I thought it was. Or maybe it's like, oh, I didn't even think about that, but I know this for next time. And the event happens and hopefully it's a, you know, a successful thing that, either way, if it bombs or it doesn't, it's a learning, like you're learning from it.
Capability, you know, will come out of that as well.
Exactly.
That's, I really want to read that, so I'll have to, I'll get the title before we go today. Yeah. But yeah, coming, so I'd be curious, well, yeah, to ask you for the podcast, what were some of the, you already spoke to some of it, and I know you well enough that I think I know some of them, but as far as like, yeah, taking the first step, like what changed between maybe a year ago having an idea or, you know, thinking like, oh, I think I want to do a podcast sometime, or like how many of those like idea conversations happened? What were like the big hesitations and what helped you eventually like push through to actually take the step? Because, yeah, I think for me, it might be different, but there are these huge hesitations that everyone has when it comes to any kind of new endeavor.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I love the foot analogy. And as you were as I was visualizing the example of, like, yeah, just the mechanics of the human leg and foot, like, lifting off the ground and going forward. And, like, it takes, there's gravity, and so there's resistance at first to, like, lift your leg and then put it out. But then on the second half, once things are in motion, it's almost harder to undo it. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want, really. If you really want to succeed in something, you want to push yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're forced to fall through. And then all the all the learnings come after that.
Right.
Yeah. So what would, can you think of like specifics?
Yeah. Who's hosting this podcast? No, I really am glad you're asking that question, because I haven't actually fully thought it out. But you know, I think one of the bigger things that have shifted in me is kind of, well, recently, you know, when my friend Jesse passed away the whole situation that unfolded in me going to Waco to host a wake in his honor with all of our old Waco friends, and just putting on that event, I think, was kind of a in the midst of all the emotions and all the things that obviously I was thinking about. And when I, after that week of being in Texas, putting on the event, getting to spend so much time with the friends there, and honestly getting just so much encouragement from people thanking me for putting that event on, I think a lot of it helped facilitate so much healing and just closure for a lot of people. You know, talk about impact. I very much so felt the impact of me going and doing that. And it wasn't like it was hard work either. I mean, I feel like it very was divinely led. So many things just happened that were just so perfect that I could have never planned. But I think by me deciding to go and put that event on, I mean, we had like multiple bands play, and it wasn't, I'm not saying that I put all this together at all, but I think me being kind of a lead facilitator of that really made me realize that like I can do things. And I'd also caught up with some different friends that I hadn't seen in a long time, and who also like grew up going to Antioch and stuff, and we had talked about life, and I just kind of shared with them some of the things that I was learning, and it really resonated a lot with them. And we had even talked about starting a podcast when I was there with some of the friends, this guy named Chris and Jonathan. But, and I just realized like what I have to say is a lot of the things that I've thought about, and, you know, as cliche and a kind of eye roll to like my old Christian upbringing of like talking about your own testimony. But like really just, there's nothing more powerful than you sharing your own story. Because, you know, you're not talking out of your ass. You're just talking about what you've lived and what you've done. And there's power in that. And so I think that was kind of part of it. And then honestly, just meeting some of the people here in Charleston, you know, met Kevin through Open Mic, his podcast just won the voted best podcast in Charleston, Midnight Terrors. He does a podcast that he loves, like all things horror. It's totally not my genre at all, but, you know, he just seeing how he's just growing his podcast and doing his thing and just like overcoming his fears, and he's just killing it. And I talked with another friend, just honestly it was like right before I recorded my first episode, I had talked to a friend named Jared at who works at Starbucks that I do a lot of my writing at, and he had started his own podcast too, and just talked to me about how he started his, and it was just like, well, duh, this is so easy, you know. And just seeing other people do it, you know, it's like seeing other people doing their thing almost gives you permission to say, oh, I can do that too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was just kind of the coalesce effect of all those things coming together in the last month for me that was just like, screw it. Why don't, you know, a part of my thought process though was because, you know, I have ADHD and like I do tend to like jump from one hobby to another or like really get into, you know, whatever it may be at the time and then jump to the next thing as soon as I get bored of it. And I was a little bit worried for a while that starting this podcast was like a distraction to my writing, and I really had to think about that a lot and really question my own motives of why I wanted to start it. Because, you know, sometimes writing is hard and it's like, I don't know exactly where to go. And, but what I realized is that it's such a mutually beneficial thing for me because so much of what I'm writing about is so connected to all the things that I would discuss in this podcast, and me having a platform where I can talk with other people and learn from other people, that very much so directly impacts and only improves what I could be writing about. Mm-hmm. So I see that it is just a very helpful parallel to each other. But yeah, I think honestly, those things that have happened in the last few months, I know that there's other growth things that have happened in me, kind of a little bit more under the surface, that have been happening to kind of get me ready for this, kind of taking action, a little bit more in my life. But, yeah, I think hosting Jesse's Wake and seeing the impact, and then just seeing other people doing the podcast was like, yeah, I think it's time, and just getting so much encouragement from other people. So,
yeah, that's cool. I totally, yeah, the idea of just being inspired by other people that are already doing the thing, like, you know, Kevin and friends that you meet, resonates a lot, because that's how I felt or feel recently with music, you know, getting more involved with like playing out at open mics and uh-huh. making friends with other musicians. And this idea for me, like, music always felt like, yeah, something that you either are like incredibly talented and lucky and you're like a super rock star, or you play, it's a hobby. And like, that's it. And it can, should stay in your room, kind of. And then, but yeah, just like getting out and playing with people who are like, you know, they're in the middle. They're not selling out arenas, but they are, it's something they care about. And they're like making a living, or they're playing out regularly. They're gigging and putting out tracks, recording, putting stuff on Spotify. And there is something about, yeah, just being able to observe someone in real life in your circle do mm-hmm. something that you thought maybe was out of reach, and it kind of normalizes it.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. So there, I guess there's a takeaway for the listeners.
Yeah.
If you want to do something and it feels out of reach, get on whatever Reddit or Facebook groups or something
yeah.
and find people that do that.
Yeah.
And then just go be in the proximity and it'll probably put you in the right
yeah.
direction.
Well, and it makes sense. Like, I feel like we've kind of naturally gone away from the model of, why am I blanking on the word? Like if you had a carpenter or something, apprenticeship, you mm-hmm. know, of like, going and seeking a master or whatever, right. and like, just like, hey, can I just hang out and learn a few things from you? And, you know, I think this probably has been a natural reaction to just how much we equate value with money. And so, and what I mean by that is like the idea that someone is going to spend their time to go work with somebody for free to learn skills. Like, I think we don't see skills as valuable as maybe we once did, as like, oh, to learn this skill, holy crap, that's valuable, you know? And we see education and information as just so like in the mix, into the milieu that is the internet and all the different information, all of the data that's out there. So people just, I don't know, it's kind of a weird thing where we could learn anything we want to by watching a series of YouTube videos.
Yeah.
But we also still get stuck in just, oh, I don't know how to do stuff. And mm-hmm. I think it kind of going back to the three C's, like that you literally can't get confidence unless you do stuff, unless you make the commitment to do it and you follow through in doing it. And of course, there's like things to learn about not setting goals, like unrealistic goals to where you just fail every time, but like, you know, one step at a time of people dropping stuff on the ceiling above us. But, yeah, like really figure, I mean, it's easier said than done, but like, as I'm, what I'm realizing lately in a few different arenas in my life, but like, you know, like 36 years old and I have a garage, I have a few tools, I know enough to be very dangerous.
Regular, you know, Tim Allen, tool man.
Exactly. You know, it's like once you have a couple of power tools, like you could easily do a lot of damage. But you know, it's like I've done enough things where, you know, I know how to like pre-drill holes and do different things that to make it right, you know, and measure. And so it's like, I can't, there's so much that I can't do, but I have almost like a base set of skills that if I YouTube something, I can probably follow the instructions. But as I fix things around the house or put up shelves or like whatever the little thing is, it's like each of those little things is almost like its own little three C's. Like I had the commitment that I was going to put up shelves in the closet. And I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I made a few mistakes along the way, but you know, go back to Lowe's to grab the thing that I broke or whatever, you know? But, and then eventually I did it and it's like, okay, now I have a little bit more confidence to the next thing and then the next thing. And then eventually it's like, I do have this confidence about me that I can fix stuff around the house. And it isn't like, oh crap, this is going to be expensive. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, I mean, there's reality checks that need to be in place of certain things. Like, don't let me anywhere near
that.
Yeah, exactly. Please don't let me touch anything electrical yet. But it's nice when you start to learn different things. And I think that very much so applies to life in general. And this has kind of been my, you know, looking at my own spiritual practice just from like a less spiritual, more practical lens, maybe more of like a, I don't know, motivational speaker type, life coach type lens. Like what I have kind of been doing is trying to fine tune my viewing glass tools, per se, like, you know, putting my internal microscope into focus better and getting to be able to zoom in on different areas a little bit better and better to find fear. And really analyze why I hold that fear. Not saying that it's stupid or all fear is dumb, but just like really examine it. You know, why am I so afraid to put out a podcast? Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel scared to be vulnerable to people. What if what I have to say nobody cares about? Okay, and then asking myself the question over and over, is that true? Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know, response I get in, you know, internally. And I've done a lot of journaling that way where I ask myself questions. Maybe that's been preparing me to be a good interviewer too. I don't know. I've asked myself a lot of questions, but so like we've talked a lot about fear and just the fear that prevents us from taking those first steps. Mm-hmm. 'Cause we have a lot of ideas that don't actually go into action. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it is just, there's a natural thing that happens when you start getting to the age we are now, where we're no longer the young bucks that we once were, where,
how dare you,
don't make me think about this, why? But like, maybe there is just a natural thing that happens when you start realizing how quick time goes by. Mm-hmm. Like, holy crap, it's already almost June. That's crazy. It just felt like it was just the new year, you know? And I feel like that is something that happens as you get older. It's like time speeds up. And, you know, I think it comes, the movie line always comes to my mind for the Shawshank Redemption classic line, like, you can get busy living or you can get busy dying. And, but it's really true. It's like either, and I think that's kind of partially what also has been the turning point in my life, is I realized that, you know, I had so many ideas that for different little businesses and different things that I had built websites for, bought business cards for, that I just didn't take that next step to actually do it because of whatever fear was blocking me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that when those start to stack up, they start creating this, I don't know, like almost like if you're spinning your wheels in some mud or something, each of those ideas that didn't quite go anywhere is almost like putting like a rock down in that mud puddle to where eventually you get sick of like not doing what you're going to say you're going to do. And then eventually you get enough traction to move out of that rut. And, you know, not that, you know, and part of that was like, it was kind of, I held some shame around that. Like, you know, I had different ideas and kind of what we were talking about earlier, I would tell everybody about the idea and then they're like, so what happened to Centipair? And I'm like, oh, well, nah, I just decided not to, you know, it's like once I actually had to invest money or whatever, it's just got too fearful about it. But, yeah. And I think part of that is just how safe do you feel in your day to day? Like, whether that be material, monetary safety, physical safety, but a lot of it is just emotional safety, you know, mm-hmm. that fear of criticism that locks so many of us up.
Yeah, I think questioning or like digging into like the fear behind it is really important. And it's kind of almost like camouflage because it's, I feel like fear is kind of like one of those deep root emotions that usually you don't see fear at first glance. You see something else. Like yeah. you see, oh, but it might not be a good business decision or, oh, I don't know. There's other, mm-hmm. there's like other words.
Excuses. Yeah.
Excuses.
Yeah, like, so for blame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like for me, well, like talking about hesitancy for certain ideas, when I've always thought and still think, you know, a lot of it is the first C, like the commitment of it. Mm-hmm. It's like, do I almost like, and this is where fear comes in. It's like, I think if I dig into it, I'm afraid that if I commit and start moving in the direction, like, I'll be locked in to that thing, like, forever. Which is kind of silly. And it's one of those things, like, if I say it out loud and I actually try and take it apart, it doesn't really make sense. It's like, right. Well, Jake, if you wanted to, you know, whatever book, if you wanted to play music live and you sent out a bunch of emails and you booked a gig with a bar like 2 months, it's like, it doesn't really mean that you have to play out gigging forever. Like you might yeah. play once, like yeah. they might not even call you back. or they might ask you for residency and then, you know, maybe you say yes and you're afraid like of booking the rest of your year, mm. but it's like, you can always pivot. And I think that's something right. that naturally, for whatever reason, like, I don't believe, or, you know, I right. don't operate as if that's true. I operate as if, you know, well, I don't want to put so much effort and time into this thing because what if I don't want to do it in 5 years mm-hmm. or next year or even in a few months? And then that'll hold me back. But the problem that I've experienced and what sucks about that angle, which I think is slightly different than like the fear of criticism from others, but it's still fear. And it's like, yeah, that's that can, you know, it can really be paralyzing because then you, or for me, I feel like, you know, so much time goes by and you don't pull the trigger on certain ideas or endeavors because you don't want to be like stuck in one lane.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you realize it's been like, you know, a few years and you never really picked a lane and you're just like, you didn't pursue this track, but then you also didn't pursue that idea. You didn't pursue that other thing. And so, yeah, I think it's really good, like good advice to, if you have an interest in something or if you've had an idea or endeavor that you've kicked around, but like, I'm just not sure, like trying to dig into it mm-hmm. and see what's holding you back. Like
yeah.
the fear of just failing? Is there a fear that you'll feel embarrassed? Is it a fear that other people won't respect you if it doesn't work? Is it a fear that you're going to miss out on something else if you choose door number one, that you'll miss out on door number two and three?
You may shit your pants in front of a large audience.
It's very possible. Even likely.
Why did I eat the ceviche?
Our deepest condolences to the IBS listeners.
It's IBS. Sponsored by Sponsored Depends. By. Yeah.
But yeah, it's such a hurdle. I think a lot of people experience that. Probably everyone at some point.
As I feel like with a lot of things, I tend to get some sort of visual analogy in my mind. But when you were talking about this, you know, you're talking about these different lanes that you're doing. And like when you're choosing what you're going to do next, or, you know, and obviously different decisions have different commitment levels to them. Obviously, if there's like an upfront cost that you need to purchase something, you know, you got to buy scuba gear if you're going to get into scuba diving, you know, whatever the thing is.
You adopt. I don't even know if I want a baby in a year.
You adopt. Michael Scott. Right. But like, I got this visual of like the way that you were talking and the way you were describing, you know, and analyzing how your mind thinks. It was almost like there was this like row of lanes that you could choose, and the lanes that you go into are almost like kind of like how people can go like raft down the river in between like these huge wall cliffs of the Grand Canyon and stuff. Like, it's like choosing a lane has these huge walls on either side where you're stuck going down that avenue. But, and that being like the model in which you are seeing these different ideas. Mm-hmm. And like, if I choose something, I'm stuck in that lane. Whereas it's really not that way at all. And you just said that, you know, very well, but the visual that I was seeing was like, instead of looking at it like you're choosing a specific lane, I was kind of seeing as like these different ideas and things that you pursue, whatever comes of them, it doesn't really matter. You choosing an action to try something new is like, I don't know, visualize like just some sort of upward momentum, and we can look at it like on a graph or whatever, but in whichever direction, it doesn't matter, but it's upward momentum. You choose something and it goes, you're learning something new, so the line is going up. And then, whereas like if you just kind of stay the same, it just plateaus. And then sometimes if you stay someplace too long, it starts to dip down because, you know, maybe it's making you feel worse or something. It doesn't matter, but like you choosing something is bringing you up, and from that new heights it gives you access to new choices. Mm-hmm. So it's like, instead of the idea that it, you know, whatever the example, what was the example that you doing,
adopting
No. Downward,
like, no, playing, like gigging out, for example, if you're a musician and you never left playing guitar in your bedroom, like,
exactly. And you've kind of, and each time you have ventured out, like I remember back in Austin when we started doing open mic nights together, like that was such upward momentum for us because it really sharpened our skills, gave us all this experience in playing our original songs, which is a vulnerable step to make. And then you kind of, you know, when you moved here, we upped that a few different times, playing a couple of gigs together. And like now that you're on this trajectory, because you've surrounded yourselves with other people that have been doing the same thing, like, start, you know, we've had conversations, we can definitely have another episode talking about this as a creative, like starting to consider yourself as an artist. Mm-hmm. But you're now like wanting to grow to the next level of starting to gig around under your name, like as an original song, you know, singer songwriter, Jake Augustini. Mm-hmm. Like, go to town, that'd be great, you know. And you've started your little, you know, started your social media account for it and doing these different things. You have your cool business cards. But yeah, it's like, if you choose to do that, if you start doing gigs for a while, you're only growing those skills and meeting new people. More people are like potentially becoming fans of you that will follow whatever you do. So where in that scenario do you feel like there is some sort of commitment to, do you feel like it's a commitment to potential fans that you might have, or commitment to who?
I see what you mean. I think,
you see what I did there?
Oh, I flipped the script. Yeah. Now I see who's the host.
Clever girl.
Clever girl. Yeah, I guess the commitment for me, and I mentioned this earlier today when we were talking, is very much wrapped up into time. And so for me, it's almost like, if I choose to like pull on this thread and like try and get out and play more music, that's gonna take a lot of time per week and potentially prevent me from doing other things I enjoy in life. So, for example, and I actually haven't thought too deeply into this, so I should, but, you know, in the past, well, you and I both have had the fortune of being able to go travel quite a few different places. And that's something, I love to do and hope to do more of in the future. And so I've even thought of that as like, you know, oh, but what if I get into like, I'm a working musician and I like book out my calendar and the like, you know, are my travel days over now? Like, cause I'm just going to be playing the Charleston, you know, singer songwriter circuit or something, which is kind of silly. It's like, if I want to do a trip, I can just not book.
Right.
And all this is also like this whole, whatever, like fantasy problem is all built on this idea that I actually have a full calendar as a worship musician. Right. When really I played like 3 paid gigs in my life.
I mean, I'm on a yacht.
So. Yeah, I mean, mostly doing pretty well. But yeah, there's so many. To answer your question, yeah, it's like a time focused thing. Like, oh well, I'd have to devote so many hours for practicing to build up a repertoire that I can actually play like 3 hours. I need to, you know, work on my voice and like just stamina for being able to sing that long, and yeah, just have these kind of like hypotheticals of like, oh, I probably have to do less of that, or maybe I wouldn't have the opportunity to do this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like most things, like all the gut reaction and fear and like potential risk involved are usually like amplified in the negative way, or, you know, there's like a negative bend to it. So it's like all my assumptions are painting this pessimistic future, and therefore I choose maybe not to pursue that endeavor. And then, you know, fast forward 6 months, maybe I didn't go on any like travel trips. Maybe I didn't really do much. Maybe I still was playing out, but maybe I was just playing out open mics. And it's like, was so cool. But, you know, I didn't pursue the other thing. Yeah,
you didn't push yourself to grow in that specific way that you maybe wanted to. I struggle with this, but, like, I'm interested. So in that hypothetical to not so hypothetical scenario, do you struggle with, let's say after the 6 months you don't go anywhere, do you struggle with the guilt of not like, oh, I could have done XYZ with the past 6 months of my time and I didn't, and I feel bad about myself for not doing it?
That's an interesting question.
It is.
It is. I don't, let me think. I don't think so. Well, maybe not on that short of a timeline. But, yeah, maybe stretch that out over, like, 10 years.
Okay.
And so, for example, the work I do is tech support, and I've been in that realm of work now for probably 10, 15 years, over 10 years. And I do sometimes, especially, now approaching my 38th birthday, which I don't want to talk about. but yeah, just the idea of, you know, delaying, you know, pursuing maybe music a little more seriously. And I could have the thought of like, oh wow, I've spent the last decade getting really good at troubleshooting technical problems that I don't care about at all. And I might have robbed myself of something more enjoyable, like more fulfilling, had I devoted more time to doing this thing I'm really passionate about. I will say though that I don't really dwell there, because I fortunately have gotten introspective enough where, you know, I then look at all the other things that I did in the last 10 years and how many of those, particularly around traveling, would probably not have been possible had I gone the musician route and stayed maybe working on food and bed where I had a little more flexibility.
Right.
So
and making good money so that you could travel and do
So as in general, for myself, I rarely struggle with regret in that sense. It's not very often.
It's good.
Which is nice. But I will say, I do catch myself often thinking like, oh, why have I devoted so much effort into this realm of activity that didn't bring any fulfillment and I didn't really enjoy?
Yeah.
And maybe a better, rather than saying, why did I do all that? Because I did get paid, it was a job and it afforded other things. Maybe it's more like, you know, wishing I had devoted a little more time or pushed myself a little harder in other areas that I knew I would get more meaning or fulfillment out of.
Right. Well, are you, to get a little bit less hypothetical about it, is the whole gigging and playing some shows as a local artist, is that something that you are thinking about moving towards more seriously?
Yeah, I would say I'm, what's a good way to frame it? Taking cautious baby steps in the right direction. Because right now, I can tell you my initial gut reaction is, or a few would be, one, like, oh, I don't know if I have enough material to for 3-hour sets. Two, I don't know if I'm good enough, like, talent-wise. And then, of course, just the hurdle of actually, like, emailing, you know, local venues to ask about getting put on their calendar. So, a recent thing I've done is, I've a Google Sheet, like, spreadsheet of, I've kind of inventoried all the songs I know, and including, like, ones I've written, but then also cover songs, and, like, kind of taking the time to have linked, like, chord sheets, and then even, like, duration, so I know...
You know a lot of songs.
It's surprising, actually. Once I got started on the spreadsheet, I was like, oh, wow. Granted, you can tell my sweet spot was, like, early to mid-2000s.
Oh, yeah. You know, and there's so many people out there. I'll just say, like, obviously... we grew up listening to so much of the same music. So if I heard, just putting myself in a fresh eyes perspective of someone at a bar, like, there's so many songs and players around town that play all the very similar, like, cover songs. And honestly, having someone who's a little bit different that plays some of the, you know, the kind of, you know, I don't know. I always like to use, like, the Garden State soundtrack as, like, an example of, like, the litany of different stuff. But, you know, the Radiohead covers, you know, the Random Shins covers and stuff like that, that I think would be super refreshing and people would actually really identify with. Mm-hmm. It may not have the same... It's like, would you rather have, like, a few people at the bar be really excited about whatever songs you're playing, or everyone being like, oh yeah, I know that song.
Right. I was playing Margarita I'm drinking Margarita. This is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. I hope so. But yeah, like, So getting back to your question, I guess that's kind of a baby step. Was like, okay, well, let me actually write out, like, how many songs do I know? And of those, how many do I remember? Like, how many could I actually, like, play tomorrow?
Right.
And then, like, how long? Like, how much time? And I actually just finished tallying them up and, like, hit that, like, 3-hour mark. So I was like, okay, cool. So the check, like, I know enough songs. Mm-hmm. That's off the list. And then, so the next step that I will be working on is kind of, okay, well, now let's test my own, you know, stamina, like, and play through these. So my intention is to, like, start, and this will just have to be in my apartment, but, like, kind of just taking, you know, a night, like, okay, I'm going to play through a full hour, like, every night this week.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to bump it up, and I'm going to play to, like, 2 hours until I can, like, comfortably play like a 3-hour set.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have to do that. I think, you know, some kids argue like, dude, nobody cares. Just go find a gig and you'll be fine. But if, you know, if I want to be extra cautious and have my confidence up, I think that's
I was just about to say, based on the 3 C's that we were just talking about, the confidence comes after the commitment. So,
damn it.
You know, maybe the next podcast episode we'll be seeing how, you know, how the gig went.
How the first gig I choked, I pissed my pants.
But I learned something.
Where they told me to leave her.
But, sponsored by Depends.
Yeah, but I got this great Depends sponsorship.
Exactly.
Don't really need the product yet, but that's right. It's good to know it's there.
The performance series. It's got you like on the front, like with the freaking, you know, rock guitar thing. Oh my gosh. The performance series. It's got like the monitor like box connected to your belt buckle with its like the bulging pants. That's amazing.
Oh, so good.
But yeah, you know, I really do think that you've played gigs, man. You've been ready for so long. I think it's just book the gig. You know, we know people like you can call. I mean, Josh.
Well, Steve stole his bars. So.
Oh yeah, you're right. Exactly. But we, we still have contacts for different places that could easily get you a gig set up on the books. And sure, play a couple of times a night to get yourself ready to go. Obviously, I'm not saying just book it and just swing
voice
it.
Voice just like immediately goes out after five songs.
But and I'm excited, you know, and I would be more than happy to support you neither in any way in shape and form. Obviously, like, you know, if that means me, you know, backing you up, playing some lead guitar with you or whatever that looks like, you know, I think that's been something that I've wanted for a long time is for us to play more gigs together. But obviously more than any part that I would play in it is just to, you know, you really are a gifted songwriter, and a lot of people do connect with your music. And having said that, would you be willing to share a song?
Oh man,
you can take a gulp of water and I'll get the guitar.
Let's see here. Actually, I'm gonna go pee. We'll edit this. All right. Or we can just bring the mic in here.
Yeah, we just bring the mic in there. All right. We'll get the levels going while he pees. We have, we've got Jake Augustini. What's your Instagram if people want to follow?
That's a good question.
Jake Augustini Music?
I think it's Jake A Music.
Jake A Music.
Sounds probable.
Sounds probable.
Actually, let me find a pic real quick.
A pick.
Yeah.
Oh, you're gonna live stream this?
Well, it's not live. Oh no, I was just meant for the plug-in.
Oh okay. Oh, a pick. I thought you were talking about snapping a pick. He needs a pick for the guitar, not of us sitting here. A plectrum.
A plectrum, if you will.
I will not.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, I would love for you to play one of my favorite songs that you've written. It's called Ghost. And do you want to give it an intro for it?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. Ghost was written, I looked it up recently, I want to say like 10, close to 10 years ago, which is kind of crazy. And I think I wrote it, if I recall, it was kind of during a transition out of working like multiple jobs, kind of like gig work and food and bev, into an office job, and feeling kind of just discontent, and like I was feeling just kind of in a routine and not like feeling a little discontent over like I'd kind of like settled into a life that I wasn't super excited about.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. I'll think of a better explanation later.
No, it's all good. Yeah, this is
yeah,
Ghost.
This is called Ghost, so we'll see. I woke up tired. I woke up tired. I woke up tired. Like I got no rest at all. And time's never been slow. Sheets entrap me, my dreams evade me, my hope escapes me, like my shadow on the wall. It's a futile chase, I know.
Jake Agostini.
Thank you.
I really do love that song. I think, you know, it's interesting with songwriting, just how, like, you can write it about something, but this is theoretical because I haven't written a lot of songs that a lot of people have listened to and have their own opinions on. But what I've heard by watching documentaries, it's interesting how you can write something about, you know, whether it's something that's going on in your own life or, you know, however you may, what perspective you're writing the song about, but how other people can hear it and come up with their own meanings behind it. And, you know, I think for me, hearing that song a good bit, and, you know, that was one of the songs that when we first started playing open mic together towards the end of our time in Austin, you know, both of us going through just divorces and just like pretty hard times. It was an interesting time as far as, and very obviously very meaningful time when we were playing original music together that we were writing. And like, you know, I think that song really impacted me a lot of like, 'cause I think for at least a good chunk of time in my life, I did feel like I was kind of like in different ways, like a ghost walking around, or just kind of like, I don't know, almost like you're going through the way that, you know, you were talking about going through the motions of work and kind of the rinse repeat of the 9 to 5 and like,
well, it's like numb or like just kind of like zombied out.
Right. Yeah. It's like, it could be a ghost, you know, I'm feeling like a zombie. It doesn't quite,
it didn't quite fit
as much. Right. But, yeah, just that repetitive nature of life that we can very much so feel like we are just almost watching our life go by, is a very visceral feeling that, you know, I know a lot of people have felt in different times in their lives. So, but yeah, and that's just one of many songs that you've written. And I would love to have you on the podcast again in the future and play more songs. And, it's cool to be able to get to do this together.
Well, yeah, thanks for letting me come on by.
Yeah, I guess this is a good stopping point, but until next time.
All right, thank you.
Peace out, Seacrest.